This is the last day of this July 2013 7-day session. So today we'll comment on a koan from the book of koans called the Shoyoroku, translated as the Book of Serenity or sometimes the Book of Equanimity. This is number 37, Gueshan's Karmic Consciousness. And this is how it goes. Gueshan asked Yangshan, "If someone happened to say to you, all sentient beings are tossing in boundless karmic consciousness with no foundation to rely upon, how would you examine him?" Yangshan said, "If such a monk appeared, I would call him by name. Hey, so-and-so. When he turned his head, I would say, 'What is it?' If he hesitated, I would say to him, 'Not only is karmic consciousness boundless, but there is no foundation to rely upon.'" Gueshan said, "Good." We do have some material on these two. They're two of the most famous names in the Tang Dynasty Zen. Gueshan's Japanized name is Isan. Isan will be familiar to some of you who've heard me comment on kicking over the water bottle, koan number 40, I think, in the Mumonkan, or have some of you have worked on it. I see in my notes here that I just read from this material in January. So I'm not going to read too much of it about Gueshan, except that he was a disciple of the famous Baizhang Weihai, or his Japanese name is Hyakujo. His student, Yangshan, together they founded the first of what came to be called the five houses of Zen, the five lineages. So they combined their names, Gueshan and Yangshan, and came to be known as the Gueyang school. There are many koans that consist of exchanges between these two, Gueshan and Yangshan. Here's one of the ones that I remember most from when Roshi used to give Taisho. Gueshan made Yangshan his attendant. Oh, excuse me. No, Yangshan hasn't appeared yet. So Gueshan himself was very young and became the attendant of Hyakujo, the great Hyakujo of the koan, Hyakujo and a Fox. And Hyakujo heard him and said, "Who's there?" And Gueshan said, "Me." And then Hyakujo said, "Stick a poker in the fire and see if there's any fire left in it." Gueshan did so and said, "There's no fire left." Hyakujo, that's Baizhang, then took the poker himself and, sticking it deep into the stove, pulled out some hot embers. Showing them to Gueshan, he said, "Is this not fire?" And at these words, Gueshan experienced great enlightenment. Is this not fire? is without this fire? It may just be an ember for the time being, but no one lacks it. That's all I'm going to read from the life of Guishan. And just to conclude by saying that I'm reading from Zen's Chinese Heritage by Andy Ferguson. He taught for more than 40 years, and in the year 853, when he had finished bathing, he sat in a cross-legged position and peacefully passed away. He was 83 and had been a monk for 64 years. Now, I have more to read from about Yangshan. He was the main disciple of Guishan. His parents refused him permission to become a monk, so he demonstrated his determination to them by cutting off two of his fingers, vowing that he would seek the true Dharma to repay his filial obligations. Repay his filial obligations. This is something that we in the West cannot, of such importance to the Chinese that we can't even begin to understand it. This school of co-founded by Yangshan and his teacher Guishan used sacred symbols, it says, to teach. And according to tradition, the sixth ancestor himself, the sixth patriarch Wei Nung, was the source of these symbols. They were passed from him to his disciple and then on to his, and then they landed in the hands of Yangshan. Dan Yuan, who gave them to Yangshan, said, "Previously the national teacher Wei Zhong received the transmission of a total of 97 symbolic circles from the sixth patriarch. He in turn passed these to me, saying, 30 years after I've died, a novice monk will come from the south who will greatly revive this teaching. When that time comes, pass the teaching on to him and don't let it end. Today, I transmit them to you. You must uphold and preserve them." There is, by the way, one koan in this same collection, the Shoyo Roku, that involves the use of some of these symbols. But they did die out five generations after Wei Nung. Anyway, he transmits them. He says he must hold and preserve them. When he had finished speaking, he passed the secret text to Yangshan. And then Yangshan, after receiving it and examining it, burned it. One day, Dan Yuan said to Yangshan, "The symbols that I gave you are extremely rare, esoteric, and precious." Yangshan said, "After I examined them, I burned them." I love this spare style of... Dan Yuan said, "This Dharma gate of ours can't be understood by most people. Only the Buddha, the ancestors, and all the holy ones can fully understand it. How could you burn it?" "How could you?" Yangshan said, "After examining it, I fully comprehended its meaning. Then there was no use keeping the text." Dan Yuan said, "Even so, when transmitting this to disciples, people of future times won't believe it. Yangshan said, if you'd like another copy, that won't be a problem. I'll make another copy and give it to you. Then it won't be lost. Dan Yuan said, please do. And he did, apparently. I guess that's the end of that. But it didn't last long, because already with Yangshan, that's already 3 or 4 generations after the 6 patriarchs, so it only lasted 1 or 2 more before it disappeared. And it was after that that Yangshan found his teacher Guishan. Guishan asked him, as a novice monk, do you have a host or not? Yangshan said, I have one. Guishan said, who is it? A host, I would guess, means a root teacher, as they would say in Tibetan Buddhism. But I don't know. There's no explanation here. Do you have a host or not? I have one. Who is it? Yangshan walked from west to east and then stood there erect. Guishan realized then that Yangshan was extraordinary. Yangshan, when he was still a new disciple of Guishan, he asked him, what is the true abode of Buddha? Guishan said, think of the unfathomable mystery and return your thoughts to the inexhaustible, numinous light. When thoughts are exhausted, you've arrived at the source, where true nature is revealed as externally abiding. In that place, there is no difference between affairs and principle, and the true Buddha is manifested. Upon hearing these words, Yangshan experienced great enlightenment. His mind must have been in a very pure state, just by necessity. And awakening always comes out of a state of emptiness, of an empty mind, a pure, undivided mind. So these three sentences that Guishan delivers to Yangshan was enough under those circumstances to turn open the mind of Yangshan. Think of the unfathomable mystery. This, I think I said earlier in Sesshin, this is what every particular Zen practice has in common. It delivers us beyond thought, beyond knowing. This translation may be a little misleading. It's not that you think of it. You place your mind on the mystery, or take it off of your thoughts. When thoughts are exhausted, you've arrived at the source. Monk asked Yangshan, what is the difference between heaven and hell? Yangshan drew a line on the ground. And here is the lead up to his passing on. It says at exactly noon, Yangshan sat on the dais and bid farewell to the congregation. He then recited this verse, completing 77 years, today it ends. When the orb of the sun is just at noon, the two hands fold the legs. Upon saying these words, Yangshan used his hands to fold his legs into a cross-legged posture and then passed away. So, to today's koan, Guishan's karmic consciousness. Guishan asked Yangshan, if someone happened to say to you, and then these words are from the Avatamsaka Sutra, all sentient beings are tossing in boundless karmic consciousness with no foundation to rely upon. So he's quoting the Avatamsaka Sutra. It's considered a Mahayana Sutra. And it's on this sutra that is based another school of Buddhism, not dissimilar from Zen, called the Wayan school. And the only difference between the Wayan school, in Japanese known as the Kagon school, the only difference is just in emphasis, basically. Well, they don't have koans. That's not part of their practice. But the teaching is Buddhist. So it emphasizes the mutual interpenetration of all phenomena. And that all phenomena in their mutual interpenetration are this one mind. So you get the sense of course, of oneness. But the other key realization in Buddhism, Zen and Wayan Buddhism, is emptiness, no thingness. And these two are very intimately related. Consider, this is where they come together. Oneness. Okay, oneness. Lots of religions teach oneness. And so does, so is the Dharma. Teach it because that is the nature of reality. Things are not fragmented. Things are, nothing is separate from any other thing. There is just this one reality. We don't see it as one because we are deceived by the senses and we see things as different. But in truth, no thing is separate from any other thing. Now, consider that statement. No thing is separate from any other thing. That means there is nothing separate. Nothing. No thing apart. There is no thing apart. This is the teaching of shunyata. Emptiness, the void. That despite everything our senses tell us, not just our sight, but our hearing, touch, and the other senses, despite all that, that there is nothing of any enduring substance. Everything is in flux. This is another way to understand the teaching of no thingness or emptiness, is that everything is evanescent. Everything is change. So you can't you can't find a thing that's unchanging at any split second. This now is science is catching up to what the Buddha and his descendants have all realized through direct experience. Quantum physics is edging closer and closer to a simple confirmation of this. All evidence now is pointing to the fact that things are fundamentally no thing. No things. Everything is shimmering, yet in a way that we can't perceive with our ordinary senses. Everything is in flux, including ourselves. This teaching of shunyata, emptiness, is impossible to convey. It's impossible to understand except through the direct experience of it, through awakening. But there is one way that I've come up with that can sort of give people who haven't experienced a sense of this, that is the hologram. Anyone who's seen a hologram in a museum, a science museum or other kind of museum, will know that it's just an image hanging in space, an image created by certain laser technology, two or three lasers in the right kind of medium, and you see, well, the ones I've seen are the head of a man or a woman, and it's very real, relatively real looking, but it's just light. It's a pattern of light that you could sweep your hand through, because there's nothing of any substance there. Now, to have awakened to the no-thingness of things doesn't mean that we see things exactly like holograms, seeing people and chairs and trees and houses as holograms. But that's just the best I can do to convey the sense of it. In one of the earliest Zen texts translated into English, this is one that Roshi Kaplan used to read from, called The Practice of Zen. The translator struggles with how to translate emptiness, and there's a long footnote where he acknowledges how difficult it is to convey this in words. And what the way he translates it is flexible hollow. It's a hyphenated word. I mean, he hyphenates those two words. Flexible hollow. It's not bad, cumbersome, but not bad at getting to the sense of things as both things and no things. So that's the Avatamsaka Sutra's basic way of presenting the Dharma. So back to this quote. So he quotes the sutra. If someone happened to say to you, all sentient beings are tossing in boundless karmic consciousness. There's no better way to directly experience this tossing about in karmic consciousness than going through Sesshin. To discover how unsteady the mind is, the flux of the mind. And in the Lankavatara Sutra, which we read from yesterday and I have here again, the Buddha is talking about how our attachment to names and appearances cause this instability of the mind and the effects of it. This phrase, names and appearances, or sometimes names and forms, this is a standard Buddhist phrase from the ancient texts, which is another way of referring to this world of appearances, this conventional world of illusion where we see things as having substance and we see things as being apart from one another. Those are the two mistakes. Seeing things as having substance to them, mistake because they're empty, and seeing things as apart from one another because they're not, fundamentally. And this is what then causes us to see things not as they are, but in accordance with our projections. So I'm going to read just a paragraph here from the Lankavatara Sutra, where one of the Buddha's usual interlocutors asks him, Mahamati, he asks the Buddha, why do fools give rise to projections and not the wise? The Buddha said, fools let their thoughts wander among the names and appearances of convention to which they are attached. And as they wander among the multitude of shapes that appear, they fall prey to views and longings concerning a self and what belongs to a self, and they become attached to excelling. And once they are attached, they are blinded by ignorance and give rise to passion. And once they are inflamed, the karma produced by desire, anger, and delusion accumulates, and as it accumulates, they become enveloped in their own projections like silkworms in cocoons, or submerged in boundless states of existence in the sea of birth and death as if they were on a water wheel. But because of their ignorance, they do not realize that their own existence is an illusion, a mirage, a reflection of the moon and water. And without a self or what belongs to a self, that it is devoid of the origination, duration, or cessation of what characterizes or what is characterized, and that it arises from the projections of their own mind and not from a creator, from time, from motes of dust, or a supreme being. Thus do fools wander among names and appearances. There's nothing like going to Sesshin to bring this description to life. Remember when he says, when it refers to forms or shapes, this is everything we can picture. Physical objects, of course, but all the designs of the mind that come up when we're sitting or any other time. And the names just reinforce this delusion that things are different. Or that is, that things are separate. Things are different. Everything is different from every other thing. But they're not separate. So here we're talking about the nature of the mind short of full enlightenment, I suppose. Even those who have experienced a degree of awakening still know this world all too well. But having seen it as the illusion that it is, having this world of appearances and names and forms, having seen into the emptiness of all things, does make a difference. I suppose in the way that it makes a difference if you've had a limb amputated and there is this phantom limb phenomenon. Most of you must have heard of this. It's been documented many, many times over, where someone who has had a leg amputated, let's say, can still feel the no leg itching or burning. There are elaborate descriptions of explanations of this in neurological terms, but knowing that there is no limb there that could be itching or burning would make a difference. You still have the itching and the burning to contend with. And in the same way, after awakening, you still have habit forces that are still active, that can still cause us trouble. Habit forces like anger, resentment, various moods. Even though one has seen that there is no one here to be having these things, there's no person of any substance, and still there is the effect of it. With no foundation to rely upon, there's the emptiness element. We see the mind tossing and turning like a clothes in a washing machine, but with no foundation to rely upon. If there is nothing of any substance, if the karma itself is fundamentally empty, then how can it have a foundation? How can there be any foundation to rely on? So these are the two sides. There is coming and going, circling through the wheel of life and death, suffering. Striving, strifing, struggling, gaining and losing, rising and falling, and yet there's nothing. We say it in the Prajnaparamita, we chant it, nor is there pain or cause of pain or cease in pain or noble path to lead from pain. Waking is confirming not just through cerebral understanding but through direct experience these two sides, form and emptiness, things and no thing, are not two. That the, like the hologram, the appearance and the emptiness, the fundamental emptiness of it, are not two. No foundation to rely upon. I think of this story where the little old lady attends a lecture on astrophysics, let's say, or maybe astronomy, and listens politely as the professor talks about these very sophisticated concepts, and then afterwards she comes up to him and she said, "It's all very well, Professor, but I think you've missed the boat, and I'd like to tell you how things really are." And he said, "Well, by all means, madam, please do." And she says, "The whole universe rests on the back of a turtle." He said, "Oh, indeed. Well, now may I ask you, good woman, what does that turtle rest on?" And she said, "Why, on another turtle." And now his eyes are twinkling, and he says, "And what about that turtle? What turtle does that rest on?" And she looks at him with a smile and says, "It's no use, Professor. It's turtles all the way down." No foundation to rely upon. So Guishan poses this challenge, and Yangshan is up to the challenge. He says, "If such a monk appeared, I would call him by name. Hey, Fred." When he turned his head, I would say, "What is it?" If he hesitated, I would say to him, "Not only is karmic consciousness boundless, but there is no foundation to rely upon." That hesitating is important. What is it? Can't respond? You don't know what it is? This? Mu? It's all right, that ignorance of the truth, there's no more substance to it than anything else. Our ignorance itself has no roots. Our delusion has no roots. Our delusion is a no delusion. Because in our true nature, we know it all. Our knowing this is what brought us here. and karma willing, will keep bringing us back. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.